This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm here with my colleague and co-host Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
You've been watching TV all day?
That's not a great way of phrasing it. I was preparing for this podcast all day.
You are working hard. Yeah.
Yeah. And to our listeners, hopefully y'all are listening right now on Wednesday evening. We delayed recording so we could cover the Mueller testimony today on the Hill.
Yeah, we thought this was probably going to be, we didn't want to have to wait till next week to cover this since it's pretty timely. But I did watch it on and off. I just heard kind of the same recurring themes over and over. I'm sure you picked out things that are a little more, you know, like detailed and drew your attention. And so we'll get to that in a minute. But I wanted to talk about a couple of other stories before you get into the big news of the day. And by the way, it's 4 p.m. right now on the East Coast. Is that testimony still going on? Is the House Intelligence Committee still grilling him?
We timed it well. He finished up about half an hour ago.
Fantastic. Fantastic. We timed it exactly right. All right. Before we get into this, though, I want to talk about something that's kind of important to me, maybe not important to everybody, but it's kind of important as it relates to our national security in the United States. And that is that this week, the president welcomed the official Pakistani prime minister, the official delegation of the Pakistani prime minister to the White House. And I'm talking about Imran Khan. Now, relationships between Washington and Pakistan have been really, really bad the last couple of years. So bad, in fact, that Trump canceled hundreds of millions of dollars worth of aid that Pakistan had been getting for many years as partners in the, you know, war on terror, ongoing stuff in Afghanistan and all that stuff. So he just kind of up and canceled it. This prime minister came into power, I think, like about a year ago, and he is an ex-cricket star. And I know that doesn't mean a lot to Americans, but pretty much to the rest of the world, it's kind of a big deal. This guy, Imran Khan, was a big deal.
So it's like LeBron becomes president?
Kind of, sort of. Yeah, I think that's a fair analogy. This guy was a big deal. I'm talking about 30 years ago. He was also like this hot shot.
So Michael Jordan becomes president.
Michael Jordan becomes president. There you go. He's been involved in like politics for a while. He was a minister in his region, but he's been, you know, he founded a new party, and he's been campaigning on anti-corruption for many, many years. Now, in Pakistan, what had happened for decades now was it was just a couple, it's like two families back and forth. These two, except for that little military coup that happened, or two little military coups that happened. Otherwise, the government just ended up between like these two families. And Imran Khan was like, I'm going to break the cycle. And he won. But critics now say about him that he is using the guise of anti-corruption and anti-terrorism to clamp down on his opponents and stuff like that. But anyhow, he had to make up to Trump, make good with him. But interestingly enough, one thing he did, which I don't think has ever been done before in the United States, he was coming to D.C. for 3-4 days, and his party decides to hold what's called a jalsa, which is a political rally, very, very Trumpian in that way. Like, you know how Trump loves his rallies. They rented out the Capitol Arena here in D.C. I had actually registered to go. Like, you know, you can got a couple of Eventbrite tickets. It was free. And then I just got lazy. I said, you know what? I'll just watch it online or whatever. And I kind of regret it because it was packed to the gills. And apparently it was really well done. And he spoke for an hour towards the end of it. It was like 25,000 Pakistanis packed into, and these are all people from this area packed into the center. But a number of my friends who went said that there was, at one point, they played this very long video that was just like an ode to Imran Khan. And it was very much like just propaganda and very uncomfortable. It's like clips of him like making runs in cricket and exhausted in a rally back home and just doing all these heroic things and just people praying for him. Oh, yeah. He slipped and hurt his leg playing cricket. So they showed him in the hospital and a woman praying for his leg. It was just, anyway. So the next day he does meet with Trump. I didn't follow a lot of what happened. But, you know, what I know is that basically, here's a funny thing. This weekend I was traveling. I went to New York just for overnight. I was on the train back and this guy was sitting across the aisle from me. And he leans over. He's like a middle-aged brown guy. And he's just like, are you from Pakistan? I said, yes, I am. And so we started talking. He had flown in for this because he is like one of the prime minister's right-hand men. He is the head of the party in one of the regions, in one of the big cities, Karachi. So that was really weird. But he was telling me, look, this is just happening because we got to beg for that money back. So there was that.
Wait, what money?
The aid that Trump cut from Pakistan.
Oh.
Hundreds of millions of dollars Trump cut, I don't know, 2 years ago. At some point, he cut the money, cut this aid that Pakistan had been getting. And Pakistan needs that aid. I mean, it's simple. They need the aid. So, they're trying to reset these relationships. But during this conversation, did you see the clip about Trump, what Trump said about Afghanistan? Yeah.
Well, there's two things I want to ask you about. The one was the Afghanistan one, which is, terrifying.
Oh, sorry. Okay, let me explain what happened. Trump is talking about how, Pakistan's strategic importance, that alliance is really based on what they can do to combat terrorism and manage, like, the shit show that is now Afghanistan and has been for many decades because of one war after another on its land. And so Trump goes, you know what? If I wanted, I could, like, finish this. I could finish this war in, like, a week, 10 days, or I could finish in a week, but there would be, like, 10 million people dead, and I kind of don't want that, but I could do it. Which seems to imply is he saying he would just nuke it? He said I could wipe it off the map. He's like, I could wipe.
He's saying he'd commit genocide.
Yeah.
With nuclear weapons, basically.
Exactly. He's like, I could do that, but I'm a good guy, so I'm not going to do that. I just can't even imagine what Imran Khan was thinking at the moment.
Well, we know what Afghanistan was thinking because they immediately sought clarification on the president's statements about annihilating their country.
Yeah. Was there a response from the White House?
Not publicly that I've seen yet, but hopefully he has some not incompetent aides to try and, well, one, fix the immediate crisis, and two, convince him to never, ever, ever say that again, which they
won't be able to
do. And
also maybe explain to him that we're actually not at war against the country itself. Like, that's not even a thing. So what was the other thing that stood out to you?
His comments about what Modi, the Indian prime minister, had asked him.
About mediating a peace between India and Pakistan over the Kashmir question, which is like 70 years old.
It's like Trump managed to cause two foreign relations crises in the presser with the Pakistani prime minister, and neither was with Pakistan.
He just makes shit up off the cuff. Literally the very next day, India's like, yeah, no, that never happened. Modi didn't ask him to do that.
They seemed really angry about it, though. Like, they were extremely, like, this was like not something they could let Trump say and just be like, okay, that's, we'll just not make a thing out of it. They're like, oh, we're making a thing out of this right now.
They have to, because Modi is a strong man and Kashmir is a big point. I mean, Kashmir is, that would show weakness on the part of India towards that issue. If India was leaning in and saying, hey, can you help us resolve this? That means India is showing some weakness here. It means, you see what I'm saying? It's like they don't have the upper hand anymore. So yeah, that was just, but I'm shocked. I don't even know where that came from. I wonder if it's something that...
Because Trump must have asked. And he's like trying to pretend that he was asked to do it. And I'm sure Trump is the one who asked them.
Can I help you do this? We can fix the Middle East and Kashmir. Good luck with that. It's the other occupation. Anyway. All right. So that was that. Mostly, those were two really alarming things. But as far as Pakistan was concerned, there were no gaffes on part of the prime minister. So that went well.
It went well with Pakistan. It's the other countries that we started new problems with.
Yeah, let's see what happens, though. I mean, I think Imran Khan did kowtow to Trump. So, but he also came across pretty well. And let's see. A fun fact is Imran Khan's ex-wife, who actually produced the HBO documentary, but Anand. So I have all kinds of weird connections to this whole thing. So you know what? About a month ago, I cleaned out I had a drawer full of bottles of vitamins, and many of them I haven't touched in a long, long time. But I actually just cleaned it out, and I have two bottles in there, and they are both the same thing. They are Ritual vitamins, I swear.
But don't leave them in the same place. That doesn't help. What I do is I have one in my suitcase, because I always forget it, and then I have one upstairs and one downstairs, so that way I never forget to take Ritual.
See, that's smart. That's smart. But I keep them in a drawer right next to the stove, because there's not a single day, and moms, you know what I'm talking about, there's not a single day I'm not at the stove making breakfast, lunch, or dinner, so that's like the perfect time. I'm like, okay, I'm standing here. I gotta take my vitamins. But anyway, All of us know that we should be taking vitamins to supplement your diet, but this is the reason I got rid of all the other ones, because it was like, which ones do I take? How many pills do I need a day? And I don't have to do any of that anymore, because I just take 2 Ritual pills a day and I'm done.
Ritual is vegan certified, sugar-free, non-GMO, gluten and allergy-free, and it's no wonder that Vogue, the New York Times, CNN, and Forbes have all taken notice. Ritual's revolutionary capsule technology combines 9 oily and dry ingredients into a single pill, including vitamin E, vegan omega-3 from algae, iron, magnesium, folate, vitamin K2, and vitamin B12.
God, no wonder I feel so healthy.
Basically, all of them.
I feel so healthy.
Yeah, I've got all of them.
And Ritual searches the globe for the best suppliers. They're totally transparent about where they source their ingredients. It's just everything you need all in one pill. Well, 2 pills. 2 pills a day. So try Ritual today, because you will get an exclusive offer for 10% off your first 3 months, which is another thing, by the way. It comes right to your door, and I love that. So try Ritual today. You get 10% off your first 3 months if you go to ritual.com/45th and start your Ritual today. That's 10% off your first 3 months at ritual.com/45th. Now, before we get to Mueller, there is some news about, you say there's an indictment, right?
Not indictment, conviction. And it's getting no attention whatsoever, which is heartbreaking, because I've been waiting for this one for a while.
Oh, yes, you have been. You were talking about Bijan Rafikian, right?
Yes, this is Trump's old business partner and Trump transition team official. And I don't know if it's just barely, it's gotten some attention in the news, but it definitely has not gotten the kind of attention that, well, I guess these days, a Trump official getting convicted of a crime of conspiring or working for a foreign government really isn't that much of news.
I mean, this whole line of them.
It's just Tuesdays.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it kind of is just a Tuesday, but like, still, again, another Trump official convicted of being an agent of a foreign power. Now, Bijan Rafikian is a business partner of Flynn. He worked with the Flynn Intelligence Group, which was a consulting business. And this all goes back to the one of the big things that Michael Flynn got in trouble with, but never actually indicted on. Now, he got indicted on the Russia stuff, but he probably had an even bigger problem, or, well, I won't say bigger, but he had just as big of a problem with his Turkey stuff. And he was not charged in it because he was a cooperating witness. And they needed Flynn.
And the Turkey thing was him offering the Turkish government to get the Gulen extradited, right?
He was a gun for hire for Turkey to help them, primarily help them with
like
their
kidnap
efforts.
This guy.
Yeah. To help them kidnap and extradite a U.S. Permanent resident who is considered like a, I don't know, like a coup starter.
A political enemy.
Traitor. Yeah. All those things. And again, Flynn not charged in that case because he flipped early and cooperated supposedly. And got a really, really nice deal out of it that I wish Mueller had been asked about today, given how that seems to have worked out in the end. But we'll get to that in a second. Anyway, we've had some dramas lately when Flynn fired his counsel from Covington & Burling, his counsel since the start of this, really. And he got these new, like, Trump sycophant counsels who may actually wind up steering Flynn into prison over their advice to him. But their advice was essentially to tell Flynn to stop cooperating. What happened is you had government of Turkey says, hey, Flynn, we're going to pay you through this Turkish business developer guy, Altekin, as a cover for us. You know, so the money's not coming straight from the Turkish government bank accounts. And then you can lobby for the extradition of Gulen and help us with this plan to actually kidnap him. But because we're hiring you, we're paying you through this Altekin guy, this business guy, you're not going to have to disclose that you're a foreign agent. Now, if you are an agent for a foreign government, you have to file a statement with under FARA, the Foreign Agent Registration Act. And Flynn did not do that at first until he was caught because he was so boneheaded that he wrote published an op-ed under his name on Election Day, like saying how great the Turkey-U.S. alliance is and how much we need to extradite Gulen for him.
Right, right.
At that point, people were like, what? That looks a little bit odd. Was Turkey paying you? And that's when...
Right, it's like out of left field.
Yeah, that's when, in the middle of all his other problems with his lying about Russia, Flynn files a FARA statement on behalf of FIG, Flynn Intelligence Group. Little problem there is that statement in the FARA filing was a bunch of lies, which Flynn admitted when he pled guilty. The statement of offense, which he agreed to under oath in court, says that he made false statements in that FARA filing. Which would have helped the government when they bring their case against his business partner, Bijan Rafikian, for these same issues. Because they're going to, well, they planned on having Flynn there to testify on their behalf. And be like, yep, we broke the law. Here's how we broke it. Here's how Bijan was involved. Yep, we totally did that shit. Then in July, he gets new counsel. New counsel make a new statement. Or sorry, in June he got new counsel. And then the new counsel go to the government and say, oh, you know where Flynn said under oath that he broke the law and did, like, false information in those FARA filings? Yeah, he just got confused. He didn't really mean that. He was just kind of going along with what was in front of him. Didn't think about it too hard. But he never made any false statements in FARA filing. He didn't even review them before they. He had no idea what his attorneys wrote in that filing.
Isn't it, like, a little too late for that?
It is way too late for that. Yeah, also, like, this dude is national security advisor. I'm supposed to believe he's so stupid and inept that, like, he, one,
right,
didn't read his own filings. Fine. Maybe he's just a lazy business guy, stuff to do. But two, he pled guilty to an offense and pled, and this was not the offense he pled to, but in a statement of offense, he agreed, he stipulated that he had broken the law in this way. And he did that because he was just confused. Yeah,
there's no way his lawyers are not going over all these things with him. I mean, like, before the pleading, of course.
Well, dude definitely should have been national security advisor if that's the case. Well, he shouldn't have been anyway for a ton of reasons. So this happened all very recently at the eve of trial. And there was some speculation that, or there's some concern that it was going to undermine the federal government's case against Bijan. And it did. It made it definitely trickier. Luckily, I felt pretty good about their chances there. And it turns out they didn't need Flynn after all, because they got their conviction on the strength of their documentary evidence alone. Flynn did not testify. The documentary evidence was pretty overwhelming. And this kind of goes back to, in part, the clear evidence from the FARA filings that there was a kickback paid to Alptekin, that Turkish businessman, who was the middle guy. So what happened is there was this whole deal with Flynn and Turkey was for $600,000, I think was the number. And yeah, that money came from bank accounts supposedly controlled by Alptekin to FIG, Flynn Intel Group. And then, mysteriously, like 20% of that total was sent back to Alptekin, which is a kickback.
It's not very mysterious. That's
it's a kickback. It's very clearly Alptekin agreed to be the middleman for this exchange. Right. And as part of his fee for being the middleman, risking criminal exposure and eventually criminal indictment, was to have 20% kickback to him. So there was a lot of documentary evidence, and it was, you know, it's never a great position to be in as the government when your only witness with direct knowledge who was going to admit to all this stuff suddenly turns on you. But they won anyway. He was convicted. And it's going to be, like, at best, a minor news story from the week, if anyone even remembers that it happened.
Yeah.
Which is very unfortunate because, again, this is another example of, one, just how many people in Trump world were compromised for working for foreign governments. And two, Flynn got this sweet, amazing, incredible deal, despite clear-cut, like, ironclad, dude's gonna lose in court, full stop evidence against him for multiple criminal violations, many of them very serious, like, not just the FARA stuff, also the kickbacks, also the lying to the government, also lying to the FBI. So how come he pleads guilty to, like, one offense of lying to the government, which he's now also claims he didn't really do, and was, at one point, had a good chance of getting no jail time out of the deal?
I mean, is it because he is expecting a pardon? I mean, so it always comes back to that for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only answer. But at the same time, Cohen got a ton of, I mean, not a ton, they got time. Manafort got time. Gates won't get time, but he actually is for real cooperating. So why did Flynn get such an amazing deal
when
he wasn't even offering? But that's the thing, like, okay, if Flynn was giving something, maybe that makes sense. Again,
well, there
Trump
are
can pardon
still
him,
ongoing
so
investigations, right? Maybe there's something we don't know yet. Is that possible?
That he's not, well, maybe, except for the fact that he's clearly not cooperating anymore. And also, if he had good stuff to give, we would have heard of it by now. If there was something that important worth that much of a deal, we would have heard of it, and we didn't.
Well, if Flynn had promised to cooperate and he gets this deal and then he reneges on that, can't the deal be, like, reneged too?
Well, the thing is, Flynn has not been sentenced yet. Sentencing was put off. And it was extended to be after this trial so that he could show his cooperation and his use to the government, show all that stuff. Yeah. So now, Flynn is looking down the barrel of jail time. However, he still only pled guilty to the one minor, but relatively minor charge. So the extent of the shit he's in is limited to that. So yeah, I really don't have any answers there. I wish even today we had some more light shed on how this deal came to be and why Mueller thought Flynn was that valuable. But I guess, I mean, it's not good news, but at least Flynn is not going to get through this scot-free.
Well, there seem to be a couple of, you just mentioned like some themes where it's like so many people surrounding Trump are, you know, have some kind of ties to foreign governments, really close ties. But another ongoing theme seems to be like this world of like child sex trafficking and pornography and all kinds of stuff. I don't know. Did we cover the Nader stuff last week?
We did not. Oh, yeah. There's another, not conviction, but indictment, bail issues going on as well for that case for another Republican advisor who, yeah, was indicted for raping children.
Right. I mean, along with the Epstein stuff. And I think the judge is going to unseal, in the Epstein case, he's going to unseal like 2,000 pages worth of documents that could tie a lot of other people like into his whole sex trafficking world, right? So I don't know where that's, when that's going to happen, but...
And this week, too, you just reminded me that this week we had the freaking video come out of Epstein Trump hanging together at a party with all those girls and women. I think they were all women. And Trump getting all handsy with them.
They were cheerleaders.
Yeah, that's been, like, totally, everyone's just like, okay, cool. I mean, they were overage, so what more do you expect?
You know why? Because, Susan, we knew that. We knew, the thing is, like, all of this stuff about Trump, I mean, it's disgusting, but the thing is, all of us who were, like, horrified at him running and getting the candidacy and then actually winning, I mean, we were because we knew all these things about him. Like, these were all things, we knew how he was about women, we knew how disgusting he was, we knew how inappropriate he was. Like, we already knew a lot of it. I mean, a lot of the allegations against him existed already, the rape charge. I mean, like, so much of it was already there, right? And it was kind of like, so it's almost like what, you know, and then even before the election, all these women came out and it was like, well, it did nothing. So that's why I think now it's like, oh, there's another video of him, whatever. I mean, it's, you know, we've got pictures of the First Lady posing nude. I mean, like, nothing is beyond the pale for this family. And that's why we just, it's not news. It's not news. Will it be news if there's evidence? I don't even think it'll matter if witnesses line up, women line up and say, yeah, we were trafficked through Epstein and we were underage and we were solicited to Trump. It still is not going to matter.
We already have one woman who said that, not under her real name, which matters. I mean, at this point, short of Epstein actually holding on to some blackmail material against Trump, I don't see anything happening.
Yeah. There might be a whole bunch of people coming down, but Trump,
I mean, he's
held
blackmail. Epstein has blackmail on some people, so we'll find out. Well, maybe we'll find out who they were. Yeah. And good riddance to all of them, whoever the hell they are.
Well, speaking of things that probably won't matter much, call me a cynic, but let's get to the Mueller testimony. So, Susan, I am kind of known in the podcast space as being somebody who's very concerned about how they smell and trying to smell as good as they can.
And by that, you mean Patrick is obsessed with smelling you.
I mean Patrick, but also, yes, look, I mean, like, it's kind of spread slowly. You know, every so often I get tweets and do you really smell so good? I do because I layer a lot, but it's...
No, I get questions about that. Like, the last time we were out together at a convention, someone came up to me and was like, why does everyone talk about how Rabia smells? I'm like... Well, it's Patrick Hines, but also she smells great.
But look, I couldn't smell great unless I started with a great deodorant. And I'm so excited about the sponsor. I'll be honest, I really am. Because I have over the years gone through dozens of deodorants and hated so many of them. And I love Native. It is a fantastic deodorant.
It is actually pretty amazing. Yeah. I'm not going to say which ones are not amazing, but I've tried ones that are not. And this one has it all. It's not. It's a low-key scent. It's effective. Leaves no smears. Perfect.
No smears. There's no aluminum in it. There's no parabens. There's no talc. There's none of the nasty stuff. It's got great natural ingredients like coconut oil, which, by the way, is antimicrobial, so you don't stink. Shea butter keeps you nice and moisturized. Tapioca starch, which keeps the wetness away. And I work out really hard every day. It's like I need something that really can protect me. And this stuff is pretty fantastic. Also, no animal testing, by the way, which is very, very important to me.
Also, it is a million freaking degrees in D.C., so everyone definitely
needs it. Yes, we are living in a swamp right now. Native also has over 8,000 five-star reviews. You can check Native out in Today's Show, Women's Health, Elle, Good Morning, and so many other platforms where, like, people love Native.
So for 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code 45th during checkout. That's right, for 20% off your first order, go to nativedeodorant.com and use our promo code 45th during checkout, and you can have great smelling deodorant too. And smell like Rabia.
Smell like Rabia. Or, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the Mueller testimony finally happened 4 months after his report came out, because that's the speed of Congress.
So in the morning, there were two hearings today. In the morning, there was a House Judiciary Committee hearing, and then in the afternoon was a House Intelligence Committee hearing. I watched about 70% of the morning hearing. By the afternoon hearing, I had too much other stuff to take care of. And also I was just kind of starting to, it was all just, I was getting glossed up. My brain was starting to fry. Because all I heard, it was basically every Democrat was asking questions related to obstruction, and every Republican was talking about collusion and just pointing to there's no collusion. And it was this like two separate, they were just completely talking past each other. I don't even think they gave crap about the answers that Mueller had to give for the most part, because it was just about
when
making
he gave answers.
When he gave answers, right. And can I just say, I think he has a hearing problem or something, but there were times he just seemed completely like confused to me. I don't know. It was just he didn't know where the questions were coming from, or didn't that? There were times when like questions were repeated a number of times, and he seemed like he didn't understand what was being asked. So it could have been a hearing thing, or I don't know what was happening.
It's a stalling tactic too. They all do that in those hearings.
Oh, is that right? Maybe that's why.
Yeah, I mean, look at Sessions. Sessions was the master of that.
Oh,
at least
yeah.
Where they're like, oh, can you repeat that thing?
Become a bumbling. Okay, yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Now I'll say overall, there were probably that's not true. Well, for the most part, it was nothing too surprising. This needed to happen. It should happen much sooner.
And by the way, going into this yesterday, right? Wasn't it reported yesterday the DOJ had instructed him specifically that to stay inside the bounds of the report, which
Mueller had written and asked for guidance so he could have, basically so Mueller could have that to fall back on, because Mueller didn't want to answer questions. I mean, all comes down to with all of this over the past 2 years, 2+ years of investigation until now, it all goes back to how fucked we are due to the OLC opinion that says mm-hmm. a sitting president cannot be indicted. Mm-hmm. That one OLC opinion has upended the future of America because of its repercussions for how Trump is handled or not handled or not investigated.
For a sitting president, but he did clearly say that once a president leaves office, he can be.
The problem, though, is like Mueller's his task all along was impossible. His task all along was internally contradictory. I don't agree with his way of threading that needle necessarily, but I can't say I have another solution for him, which is the trap he was in, and that one, he was tasked with investigating Trump, but two, could never make a conclusion or could never indict Trump for any criminal activity he found. So Mueller's solution was to say, okay, I can investigate because there's other reasons to investigate beyond indicting him right now. But also, if I do find he committed criminal activity, I cannot state it out loud. Or as he puts it, I must constantly say we declined to reach a conclusion about his criminal conduct. As if that's like a thing. Like you can just like mentally not make a conclusion.
Right.
Even when you go through all the steps and have all the evidence in front of you. But you just say, well, you know what? We couldn't do it, so we never considered it in the first place.
That's like when somebody says something in court and they're like, strike that from the record. The jury's already heard it. It's too late.
Yeah, like, it's an impossible situation. And the result is that now Trump is going to be essential. I mean, the president, once they're in office, is free to crime up as much as they want. They have a risk of, if they get out of office before the statute of limitations runs out, they have a risk of being indicted then. Mm-hmm. But given the concern about indicting political enemies that hopefully still exist in our country, and the concern against incoming politicians trying to seek prosecutorial attacks against their former opponents.
It's a bad look. The optics are bad, yeah.
So yeah, even after you're out, when you theoretically could be charged, there's going to be countervailing concerns that might mean you won't be, even if you totally, totally deserve it. Even worse, though, like even aside from this whole thing about like whether he should be indicted right now, for me, the damage isn't that it hinders the investigation and reaches this ridiculous situation where Mueller can come out. And today it is abundantly clear that he fully believes that Trump committed obstruction of justice, that he had lots of evidence of it, and that he should have been indicted or would have been indicted had it not been the OLC opinion. We had a former FBI director, a upstanding, long-term, public servant, credibly get up there and describe facts about the president's crimes. And the president can walk away and like say, like, oh, it's a victory for me. I just had a special counsel declare all these crimes I did. It's proof that I was right all along.
But there was, I mean, so this question came up a couple of times. And at one point, Mueller said, yes, when a president leaves office, he can be charged. But then later, the question was posed to him again in a different way. And he said, no, I'm not saying that but for the Olson opinion, he would have been charged. It seemed like he kind of backtracked that a bit.
So there's a couple of weird linguistic dodges he's making. So what he did say is the president. That was an interesting exchange where he straight up said, someone who's asking the president be charged after his office, and he says yes. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not completely clear whether he was being hypothetical and saying, oh, if a president
a leaves president office, or this
charged,
president.
Or if he's saying this president could be charged,
right.
Which I think was likely intentional because Mueller, Lord, he can be careful with his words when he wants to be. Mm-hmm. So I think he meant, or at least was okay leaving open interpretation, that he meant Trump personally. Now, there's another exchange he had with a Republican Congresswoman, Lesko, that was kind of a disaster for her, and one of the more enlightening exchanges, because she kept going after Mueller based on the Barr letter, what Barr had written in like a public statement about how Mueller isn't saying that but for the OLC opinion, he would have charged Trump. Now, that is technically true in how it was written, because Mueller is not saying or was not saying that but for the OLC opinion, he would have charged Trump. Mm-hmm. But also,
he's not saying he wouldn't have.
No, he's not using that as his answer. That's not the answer that Mueller's saying. But also, it's true that Mueller would have indicted Trump if he was not president. The OLC opinion didn't stop it. So right. When she started asking him, like, isn't it true that the reason you didn't indict Trump is not because of the OLC opinion? And he wouldn't agree to that. He was, like, very pointedly, like, saying, like, well, no, I'm not going to say that. Because obviously, he would have indicted Trump. Mm. So there was some, like, weirdness there. And also, there's the whole thing with, I think, Rep. Blue asked him about... Yeah, the OLC opinion thing. And he later corrected it, but not in a way that really changed his answer. It just made it a little bit more theoretically wishy-washy.
He was also asked specifically about the statute of limitations. What if a president has two terms and in that time statute of limitations on these crimes expires? But Mueller's answer was, I don't know. I don't know how that's handled.
He's not going to get into that. I mean, like, also it depends on which crime. Mm-hmm. So, like, is it a 5-year statute of limitations? Then theoretically, he could be still open to being indicted for it. But there's lots of ones.
But, I mean, like, the question was, if it's a crime for which the statute of limitations does expire, like, you know, he was asked, oh, you know, does a statute toll? And he's like, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a dodge. I mean, so the thing is, it can toll for other reasons. Like, so one thing it could happen is that there's a sealed indictment. Mm-hmm. That could toll it. However, he's also said before that they're not going to do a sealed indictment either. So that would presumably not be the case. Yeah. I mean, Mueller, no one can say he didn't warn anyone that he was not going to try and answer. He was going to try and answer as little as possible during this hearing, which he did.
I mean, the Democrats got a chance to basically lay out. I almost felt like, well, for everybody who didn't read the report, which seems like a lot of the GOP didn't read the report, and you know, certainly a lot of Trumpers probably didn't read the report. Like, the Democrats got to really lay out, like, obstruction charge by obstruction charge, like, all of the different times, you know, one by one. I'm sure they had organized it that way. And Mueller every time was like, yep, that's exactly what happened.
Oh, my God, this needed to be done. This absolutely needed to happen. Should have happened sooner, even though Mueller's always going to be this way. Because, I mean, look at Trump. He's been yelling, the report says no obstruction for the past 4 months. And I mean, I'm not saying he's not going to do that anymore after this, but also the media can now say, well, Mueller very clearly said that that is not the case.
Yeah. And said that it's not, there's no exoneration.
And that matters because these, like, a lot of the news articles are going to be they do the same bullshit every time where Trump will say something that's clearly not correct based on the Mueller report or other stuff. And the media is reluctant to call out his lies because they don't have an easy quote they can pull on and be like, actually, this is totally wrong. Now they have that. So hopefully they'll use it.
Yeah. Well, another thing that was very clear, I mean, like, and so the Republicans focused all their energy on the underlying crime, which is the collusion thing, and whether or not he had enough to charge. And he kept saying, well, on the collusion thing, it seems pretty clear that he did not have enough to charge on the collusion. But the real issue was the obstruction, and they didn't want to touch the obstruction. But one thing that
Republicans did want to go over, I mean, we should be thankful that somehow, well, listen, unless I missed it, none of the Republicans went full QAnon because they went full conspiracy nonsense. And I try and follow a lot of the Republican conspiracy stuff just so I can know what they're talking about. So I could follow a lot of it, but there was some stuff they were going on about. I'm like, what dark recess of 4chan did this shit come from?
Oh, God. What did I miss? I missed that.
Oh, just all like the attacks on the Steele dossier, the conspiracies about Carter Page and and Papadopoulos and like their attacks on Alexander Downer.
What's shocking to me, and he was repeatedly asked, did you investigate the origins of the investigation? It's like, what? What are you talking about?
And he's like, I just told you I cannot answer that. Someone else is doing that already. It's not my purview. I was not even in the federal government when this happened. So,
but since when is an investigation in and of itself, the point of an investigation is to figure out if something's going on, right? If are there crimes being committed? Since when is an investigation in and of itself illegal?
So their basic framework is that this was all a left-wing conspiracy to stop Trump becoming president by laying the groundwork.
But what is illegal in that?
A conspiracy that never even came to light till after the election.
Treason? You know what? Honestly, if they could, they would charge him with treason and hang all these people.
Yeah, they don't want to get coherent on the theory, because the more coherent the theory gets, the harder it gets to stick to it. Keeping it vague does help them to some degree.
Right. Well, it's a distraction, right? Well, okay, so one thing that was, I thought, very important that came out in this hearing was Mueller very clearly and repeatedly saying that Russia is, like, not just interfered, continues to interfere, and this is, like, a really important thing, and this is going to shape the future of our country. And he kind of laid that out there. And then he was given an opportunity, and I can't remember by which one of the congresswomen said, you know, you have a minute and a half. What would you like the public to get from this report? Like, and it just sounded like he issued a dire warning.
There were only two things that Mueller had any sort of emotional, like visible emotional reaction to. Well, he had a couple of eye rolls at dumber questions. Like, he would do that. But the only times he actually, oh yeah. But like one time he almost eye rolled. He was asked, now, which candidate do the Russians intend to help with their interference? And he's like, Trump. And he almost eye rolled. And then I think it was not Gates, it was Gohmert asked a question. And I swear to God, he did a full-on eye roll. But yeah, the two things that got him emotionally engaged were, one, the attacks on his staff. Not him. People could attack him all day long. And he was like a freaking wet blanket, stick in the mud. Like, okay, whatever you want to say. It's like someone's like saying like 7-Eleven's around the corner and he's like being attacked like you're a vicious partisan deep state gonna destroy America, and he's like, okay.
I mean, he's a Republican first of all, but
they when they attacked his staff, he did, I mean, you could, he like a good boss, he went to bat for them. The other time is when it came, the whole issue of Russian interference came up, and he got super like urgent and emotional and like, actually we're all gonna die if you don't fix this swiftly. He didn't say those exact words, but that was about, given his general tone, he might as well have said that.
I mean, I think that was his way of saying, yeah, all this is important, but something bigger is happening here. Yeah.
One of his, like, at one point he was asked about, like, if Russian interference was going on in the future. And he's like, well, one, it's not going to be just Russia. But also, yeah, it wasn't a single attempt by Russia. They're doing it as we sit here, and they expect to do it during the 2020 campaign.
So in the last week, there's been a couple of reports, just so people understand where we are and how we're responding as the most powerful country in the world. So there was a reporting by AP in the past week that the majority of the 10,000 election jurisdictions nationwide are going to be using Windows 7 or an older operating system that's not supported by Microsoft for voting in the 2020. Windows 7 reaches the end of life on January 14th, means the systems then are vulnerable to hacking, and that includes states impacted are Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Florida, Iowa, kind of important ones. And then the whole face, what's it called? Face app thing happened last week. And apparently people in the Democratic National Committee, I mean, all these people are using Face app, which is like this weird app that ages you. And it suddenly, I don't know, it was reported that the app it's actually a Russian app. And they're like, oh my God, they can use this app to like infiltrate your phone or whatever.
Or it could be someone was so annoyed by that stupid app and everyone posting stuff from it that they're like, said this lie out. They're like, hey, I heard the Russians did that just to make it stop. And if that's what happened, I'm cool with it.
That's fine. That's fine. The DNC told, the DNC and others were like, get rid of the app immediately. But around the same time, Microsoft, and this is last week, announced that it detected 740 infiltration attempts of U.S.-based political parties by nation-state actors, foreign actors. So this is happening, like, right now. And the question is, what, if anything, is being done to stop it? I think very little.
Very little. And Trump is definitely not doing anything to stop it. It's, I mean, I hope that the news shows tonight, that's what they're leading the coverage with, is the exchanges from the Volume 1 report in the second half of the day, where Mueller was very clear that, like, this is a huge threat to our existence. Like, he's like, I've seen a lot of threats to the U.S. I mean, he's the FBI director, so presumably he's seen the worst shit of the worst shit. And he's like, this ranks pretty high up there in terms of, like, oh, we're, this is existential threat to our existence. He was pretty clear at those parts. I mean, he didn't try and dodge questions as much at all. He wouldn't answer stuff about the Steele dossier. He wouldn't answer stuff about, like, future indictments. But he got really...
Internal stuff, yeah.
Yeah. At that point, he was asked, like, did Trump, like, the Trump campaign, did they welcome this efforts by Russia to subvert our democracy? And he's like, yes. They later lie to cover up this? They did this? I think his answer was like, generally, yes.
I think at one point there was a slide that was shown with Trump tweeting support over and over and over for WikiLeaks. And, you know, clearly basically encouraging, you know, like this kind of foreign interference and the release of information and all this stuff. And Mueller was asked, is that troubling? He's like, yeah, this is very troubling. And it should be should be under investigation.
He said problematic is an understatement.
Right.
But that is also about the time he made an extremely interesting statement that I didn't expect. He was asked about, you know, the national security implications of all these Trump officials who worked with foreign powers and then lied about it. And he said, and his exact words were something like, he can't talk about it because the FBI is currently looking into it. And then he clarified, yeah, currently, right now,
right.
All those, like, the ability of foreign states to, like, blackmail people in the executive branch right now, that's being currently looked into, which I think that was news just about everyone.
I'm sure that's something that's going to keep a lot of people really worried, get a lot of people really worried. They probably have no idea that's going on. But I think that was maybe that was his way of appeasing some of the, you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, he wouldn't lie about that. So lying. Like, it's true.
He could be lying.
So there is a currently ongoing FBI. I mean, he didn't say much in general about the counterintelligence part of the investigation. He described how they had people that were outside of the special counsel's office that were there to sort of go through their stuff and make sure that the counterintelligence, as opposed to the criminal investigation, aspects of what they found was taken into account, but that he personally was not involved in that and he can't answer questions about it and would not answer questions about it. But he did make it clear there was a whole separate national security investigation going on and is still going on.
Let me ask you this. Just taking a step back from this, what do you think was the point of this? Other than, I mean, I do think it was valuable in getting out the sound bites and the important information from the report and the conclusions that are clearly there, but Trump says they're not there. But do you think this was a way for House Democrats to kind of lay out like the case for impeachment?
That in part. And also just to actually get him on the record and give him, I mean, he wouldn't give clear, open, concise statements, obviously, but with the president's been going around saying the report says there was no obstruction, like, which is a blatant lie. And he was unchecked by that. The only way to stop that narrative was to have Mueller come in and be like, actually, yeah, no, that's not what happened. Now the impeachment parts also was part of it. Of course, Mueller seemed biologically incapable of saying the impeachment word. He referred to it indirectly a couple times.
Right.
I mean, it's very clear. Like, I'm sure in his head he's thinking, like, y'all motherfuckers, I made it as clear as possible. This dude obstructed justice. This dude is a threat
to
democracy.
Why aren't you doing your goddamn job?
This dude did all kinds of crimes, and I left it to other mechanisms for redress. Right. I was talking about impeachment. I do your jobs.
Right.
It's like, I'm sure he's just, like, so sick. He's like, I did my thing. I kept a very tight ship. I kept the integrity of the investigation top notch. And if y'all don't want to do shit with it, that's on you. Peace.
Yeah. Yeah. He was asked, speaking of the integrity, he was grilled a few times by different folks about the leaks. There was a leak from his office, yeah. right? What was that leak
there
again?
Was not, there was not.
There was not.
No. There was not. That was all bullshit. The whole point of that line of questions was make people think that there was a leak. There was not. There was no evidence of a leak. I forget his name. He had this binder. He's like, I have 25 instances of leaks from your office. And Mueller's like, there were no leaks from my offices. And okay. The representative is like, well, I have them detailed right here, like this one. And Mueller's just like, stony face, like, there were no leaks from my office. Mm. Like, there's one thing I have to be sure of, and it's like he ran a tight ship. Mm. So no, but there were no leaks that were proven, and it seems unlikely that any leaks he was talking about could have come from Mueller's office, and yet that is now the impression I was left with, is that Mueller's office was leaking, despite the fact that they are, like, it's impressive how little leaking came out of that office.
Right. But that's now going to be a talking point, that is a thing that happened, and he just refused to answer it.
Another interesting thing that Mueller brought up, not once, but twice, actually, which to me suggested deeper story, is he was asked about, like, what should we do to stop this from happening again? And most of the time he demurred. He's like, well, I'm not in government anymore. That's not for me. That's for y'all. Good luck with that. But twice he broke that answer, and he's like, one time he referenced, quote, the ability of our agencies to work together as an important way of fighting against Russian interference and other countries interfering in our democracy. Hmm. He mentioned at one point how, like, when different agencies each have, like, a fragment of a piece and their ability to come together and share that. Like, to me, it was very clear he was saying, like, part of this problem was that in 2016, different agencies had a piece of the pie and none of them all put it together until it was too late.
Yeah, and that's not uncommon. That happens in a lot of different kinds of matters, but on something like this, you know, I mean, but the only way to counter that going forward is, like, for some kind of task force to be created, or some kind of interagency, you know, like, entity to be created to make sure it doesn't happen. And there's no way this administration is going to allow that to happen. They want it to be as fragmented as possible.
And Congress has shown, like, no ability to actually get their act together and do that themselves. So, yeah, no, there's definitely, I mean, that was to me a very clear takeaway, is that we are vulnerable, the threat is ongoing, and there's almost nothing being done adequately to stop it.
I mean, look, at this point, I feel like there won't be impeachment proceedings. This is whatever political call Nancy Pelosi is making. Trump is going to get another 4 years because interference is ongoing. Then he's going to get out. And when he gets out, he will not be charged with anything because of what you said earlier. And then that's that.
I like your optimism. Like,
that's that. But I mean, I will say this. Now, given today's hearing, I actually would look to Congress and I'm more interested in Congress moving on the foreign interference than I am on the impeachment. I feel like that's a greater priority at this point. I don't know.
I mean, impeachment should have been, like, the thing is, Democrats didn't want to impeach him. They think he is a weak candidate. He'll be easier to beat if he's still in office in 2020, which I think is a grave miscalculation. But between that and the inability of DOJ or special counsel to actually lay out the crimes Trump has done, I don't know how you get to impeachment. If Mueller could be like, here are all the crimes he did, that might force Democrats into action, even if they don't want to do it. But combining the two, between the OLC opinion and this belief among Democratic leadership that Trump is the best person they can run against in 2020, because they're insane. They're not insane. They're just following old scripts that
I don't understand why they think that. I mean, like, the guy already beat you once.
Because he polls extremely weakly. He is unpopular. He's disorganized. He has a huge war chest now, which they're not worried about enough. And they seem to think that he's actually going to, like, roll over and quit if he loses the vote, which he's not going to.
Well, Trump, no, he's not going to. And, you know, this hearing, if nothing else, did distract him from his ongoing racist attacks against the four women you don't like calling the squad, but it's easier to call them that. But having said that, you know, since those racist attacks, his approval ratings have gone even up higher in his base. I mean, Republicans love him even more.
Yeah, that's why, like, I voted for him.
Thank you. That's why they voted for him.
Of course it is. Like, that's the only thing he has to appeal is his, like, nativist, blatant racist sensibilities. Yeah. Like, that is why they want him there. They don't care what policies he does. Having the president up there saying what they think for a lot of his base is all the policy they want from him in the first place.
And by the way, speaking of blonde, bloated racists, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom now is going to go head-to-head with our Boris Johnson is now the Prime Minister of... I mean, it's shocking, but I have to say...
At some point who was it at the hearing? Where did you see this part? Like, someone's like... It was one of the parts where I was walking out of the room and walked back in real quick. And someone was like... I think it was a Republican was like, is Boris Johnson compromised too? And I'm like, what the frick did I miss here?
What? Oh, no, I totally. That might have been when I was like, I need a nap. I don't even remember. My brain was starting to fry. You know, I don't know. But let's see. I mean, I will say this. I mean, Trump loves this guy, so let's see how. But, you know, Boris Johnson's like, oh, Brexit is happening, come hell or high water. So much for the UK.
Yay, so the UK is going to go into recession, and then Germany's already going into recession, and so is Italy, and then you'll follow. And, well, the good news is that happens, Trump will lose the election. His whole goal right now is to try and juice the economy out of every ounce of going power it has and hope it gets him through, what, next 14, 15 months through November 2020. And of course, he's finally getting his way because at end of or next week, the Fed will be meeting. And it basically is a certainty at this point. They're going to cut rates just like Trump wanted. And the only question is how much they're going to cut it, which will help the economy limp along a bit longer until it inevitably blows up. The only question is if it's before or after the 2020 election.
The election. Well, speaking of next week is also, I think, round two of the 8,000 Democratic candidates debates. Right, there's like two nights of debates happening, I believe, next week. Correct?
Yeah.
So, I don't know if that'll happen before or after I don't know what the schedule is, but, you know, we'll follow that too. I'm looking forward to seeing Marianne again.
God, I'm not. You can't laugh at those kind of candidates. We learned our lesson. We didn't learn the lesson.
We didn't learn our lesson.
I will say, though, closing thoughts
but
on
you know, if Marianne beats Trump, I just, God.
It's not going to be better.
It's not going to be any better. All right. Okay. I guess that's pretty much it. We'll all get crystals.
Yeah. We'll all have magic crystals and we'll all be like, oh, vaccination should be a personal choice between a baby and its doctor and its mother.
Just hug the illness away.
But those crystals, I'm going to reconsider given how she looks for 67.
That is true.
Maybe there's something to them.
Maybe there's something to it. Maybe she eats them. I don't know. All right.
That's absolutely what she does. Yeah. I will say, though, final thoughts on the Mueller testimony today. Mm-hmm. For historians or people who doubt the importance of individuals in world-altering events, just imagine if Comey had Mueller's job and Mueller had Comey's job.
Mm. Oh, it would have been a different world. Yeah.
If Comey had what Mueller's approach, stick for the rules, not say a word beyond the bounds of what a proper prosecutor should, Hillary Clinton would be president. And in a world where Trump does win, but Comey was special counsel, Trump would have impeached a year ago.
Right. That's profound. Food for thought. All right. Thanks so much, Susan. And thank you guys for tuning in. And we'll be back in 1 week.
Catch you next week.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.